lot of offices throughout all the agencies that are going to be closed. Thus, there'll be different terms. Believe me, that next year, if we do this, will be a very good funding source to look at.
I'll stand briefly at ease. To order. Further debate on amendment number 4. Representative Nicolai.
Madam Speaker, I stand up in support of this amendment. I think it's a good amendment because what you're doing is what happened was that they cut $235,000 out of the subsistence budget. This represents a 13% decrease in this division's budget for fiscal year 95, and a 29% decrease since fiscal year 92. The cuts to this program would cause the division to lose 4 positions. These 4 positions are one in Fairbanks, one in Anchorage, and in the Southeast offices. The division will no longer maintain a liaison with the federal subsistence program and will no longer provide subsistence information for use in state and federal land management. This will diminish the influence the department has over decisions that the federal subsistence boards make. The Southeast office will convert each of its 2 research positions to seasonal part-time, and no new subsistence studies will be undertaken by the division in this region. Subsistence harvest data that is provided to the boards of fisheries and game and the
pardon me, Representative Nicolai. Mm-hmm. Would you please summarize your comments rather than read them?
Okay.
Thank you.
I think that this is going to have great impacts on the Southeast area because they won't be taking up any new projects. They were currently working on a project where they're doing Tlingit place names for the traditional uses of the fish and game in this area. That's going to have great impacts on that program. They won't have the money to continue to do that program, which is very important to the people in the Southeast area. Their travel is going to be greatly reduced. That's travel to the Board of Fisheries and Board of Game meetings, site visits with the rural areas. They are going to be greatly impacted. I find it very ironic that we're cutting the subsistence division when the subsistence uses are a priority in this state by law. The subsistence uses of fish and game is a priority over commercial sport fishing and personal use. So I think that this is a good amendment, and I support it, and I hope that you all take it to heart and vote yes.
Representative Elton.
Madam Speaker, I mean, the world is much more complex now than it was a couple of decades ago. I think it's important to note that when we're talking about this subsistence amendment, we're talking about a certain amount of general fund dollars. But it's also important to note that Department of Fish and Game is gathering the data, is doing, dealing with a much more complex world now than they were in 1979. And yet we've got the same amount of general fund dollars in the department as we had back then. I mean, we're going to control our subsistence future. We're going to control our management of the fisheries resources and the game resources by the amount of data that we can collect so that we can make good management decisions. If we reduce the ability of the department to get that data, to make those good management decisions, I'm just afraid that we're going to be relinquishing our ability to control our fish and game resources to the court system or to the federal government. I think this amendment speaks to the heart of controlling our own future rather than letting our future be controlled by somebody else. I think this is a very important amendment, Madam Speaker, and I'd urge everybody to carefully consider it and vote yes.
Further debate? Are you ready for the question? Representative McLean.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. As stated earlier by the previous speakers, overall the fish and game budget has been eroding steadily over the years. There's been cuts made to them. And, Madam Speaker, we're sending a message to the federal government that we do not have faith in ourselves to manage fish and games within the state lands. And if that is the message that we want to send, then we're sending it very accurately.
Ready for the question? The question is, shall the House adopt amendment number 4? Would all members please proceed to vote? The Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Will the clerk please tally the board?
14 yeas, 25 nays.
And so amendment number 4 fails to pass the House. Mr. Minority Leader?
Madam Speaker, I was wondering if you can have an electrician take a look at the equipment. The numbers keep coming up the same.
We'll do that during the break. Before the Majority Leader calls for a recessing motion, I would just like to give you the plan for this afternoon. We're going to recess now until 1 p.m. We will come back at 1. We will recess at 5:30 and come back at 7, or 5 o'clock and come back at 7. Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move and ask unanimous consent the House stand in recess until 1 o'clock.
We are in recess. Come back to order. Would members please vote and indicate their presence so we can establish a quorum? We do have a quorum present to conduct business. Representative Bryce?
Madam Speaker, can we briefly revert to introduction of guests?
Without objection, we're under introduction of guests.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. In the Taylor Gallery, I have a couple of friends down from Fairbanks that tell me that the weather up there is not just comparable with that down here, but 100% better because it's not as windy and it's twice as warm. So would you please help me welcome the school board members from Fairbanks, Cynthia Henry and Jerry McBath.
Further guests for introduction? Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. In the Pratrovich Gallery, we have a guest of our speakers, Mr. Pete Geary with the Alaska Marine Pilots. Pete, you stand up for
us. Representative Bryce?
And because he's sitting behind the pillar in the Pratrovich Gallery, I didn't get to see him. So we also have a borough assemblyman down visiting with us, Mr. Dan Lasota.
Representative Toohey.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. If you please help me welcome in the Pratovich Gallery, Vicki McKay and Donna Dunlap, and they're here with the Key Campaign. If you please let them have a warm Juno welcome.
Further guests for introduction? This brings us back down the calendar to amendments. Madam Clerk, would you please read the next amendment?
Amendment number 5 by Representative Bryce, beginning page 37, line 22.
Representative Bryce?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move amendment number 5.
There is objection. Representative Bryce? Representative Martin?
Excuse me.
Representative Bryce?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Earlier in our discussion today, the question has been asked, how do we get our hands around the problem of a growing AFDC problems and Medicare problems? Well, Madam Speaker, I submit to you that we do have certain programs in place that have been proven effective that will address the growing problems that this state faces as far as growing AFDC concerns. Let me give you a couple of figures, Madam Speaker. Between May 1st and February of this month, May 1st of last year and February of this month, in Anchorage, 407 people have been employed. In Fairbanks, 183. In Juneau, 55. In Ketchikan, 77. In the Mat-Su area, 196. In Soldotna, 99. For a total of over 1,000 people being employed through the AFDC Jobs Program, Madam Speaker. And while we like to attach esoteric labels to a lot of the various different programs that we're dealing with, these people represent real savings to the people of Alaska and to this and to our budget. It represents roughly, and not roughly, but close to $12.5 million in savings. And that's not to address the fact that it also shows over a $14 million increase in our economy due to earnings by these individuals. If we're talking about welfare reform and if we're talking about breaking down the barriers to employment, I think we need to look at programs such as the Works Program or our Jobs Program within the Alaska Works Project, because it is effective, it's proven effective, and it addresses the needs that people have on AFDC. It gets them to work. Madam Speaker, we've been getting these flyers for about the past year and a half, and they go into great detail about what region of the state has been benefiting, how many people are taken off, or how many people get jobs on through the jobs program, and what their average wage is. These people that I've just mentioned, the over 1,000 people that have gained employment through the AFDC jobs program, earned an average wage of over $8 through the support that they've been able to help get through the jobs program. If there's any discussion towards welfare reform, if there's any discussion towards getting people off the cycle and breaking the cycle of poverty, AFDC jobs is the way we do it. It's proven, it's effective, and with that, Madam Speaker, I would urge the support of everybody in this body.
Further debate? Representative Davies.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. This is an example of the best kind of government services that we can offer. And, through the jobs program, we retrain people, we get people into the private sector and have a basis for developing pride and keeping their families together. Madam Speaker, this is also an instance where we can spend a little bit of money now or spend a lot of money later. It's sort of like that famous guy in the oil ads, you know, where with the oil can, you pay me now or you pay me later. Either we take care of the engine of our human resources through regular early intervention, or we're going to pay for it in terms of major breakdowns later on. Madam Speaker, this kind of thing takes people off of welfare and allows them to support themselves and oftentimes get into situations where their employment also provides for health care insurance. So, Madam Speaker, these are situations that are very cost effective and also are very beneficial to the self-esteem of the individuals involved. So I think this is an amendment that we ought to all get behind.
Further debate? Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I think it's important also to point out in this amendment that it's a question of priorities between the legislative operating budget, pay raise for legislators, and transitioning people, allowing for work programs that will allow them to transition off the public welfare system. And I submit to you that is a higher priority in the public, and it should be a higher priority for us.
Further debate? Representative Nicolai.
Madam Speaker, I do stand in support of this amendment. It is a good amendment for the people in rural Alaska. In a prior job that I had before coming here, it was my job to send students to training programs and to send them to college. And a lot of the majority of the people that used the jobs program were single mothers. And in 1992, there was a shortage of the jobs funding, and now here we are in 95 cutting this budget again. And so having a few dollars in this program will eliminate the possibility of more of those single mothers going on to training programs. So I think this is a good amendment, and I think that we should support those mothers that want to further their education and make a better living for their children. This is a good amendment.
Representative Rob Elton.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Madam Speaker, I think another important element to this amendment is that I think all of us are concerned and interested in economic development and jobs, and we may disagree with how we're going to get there, but this amendment provides that when we do get there, it's going to be our friends and our neighbors that get the work. I think this is training Alaskans to take advantage of the economic development that we all want to see occur.
Further debate? Representative Hanley.
Speaker, my reading of the amendment, number one, is that it takes the legislative contingency fund, special session contingency fund out, not the pay raises, but I don't want to debate that particularly. The work programs, I would just note, I guess it depends on what you call a cut. The money funded in the budget before the amendment would allow an increase of the number of people served, and I don't have the number off the top of my head. I believe it's in the neighborhood of 10%, so that this is allowing more people with the budget that we have. The $500,000 increase is roughly a 10% increase in the funding spent. And I also want to correct one statement I believe was made, that there was a savings of $12 million I don't think there's actually a savings to the AFDC rolls of $12 million, or we could actually just reduce the AFDC line by a significant amount. There have been some savings that flow through to those accounts, and there are increases in the AFDC program, but the $12 million, I don't believe, over the last 8 months is an actual savings to the state in dollars. And if that is the case, then I suggest that we could probably take a whole bunch of money out of AFDC in the formula program that we're paying out, and it would definitely be worthwhile. I think the jobs program does have benefit. We funded it so they can increase the number of clients next year, and I think the amount is adequate in the budget as it is.
Further debate, Representative Rice.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The previous speaker pointed out some things. Excuse me, I did not mean to imply that the $12.5 million savings to AFDC as what the department has told us, as in $12,464,505 of AFDC benefits not paid. So I will clarify that. Also, I would suggest that if there is this growing concern over AFDC and AFDC recipients, I would suggest then our priorities and funding should be an increase in getting these in the area that we have shown that's proven effective of getting these people off AFDC. I think that if it would represent a 10% increase, I would to the current funding, I believe that it just shows a higher level of concern for each and every one of us to start breaking that cycle of poverty. I guess with that, Madam Speaker, appreciate your support.
Further debate, Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The Finance Chair is correct. This does take it out of the special session contingency, and I think it just points out and identifies that if we do it right the first time, we won't have to come back in special session to fix it.
Further debate? Representative Bundy.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Certainly the goal of all of us is to have meaningful employment for all those Alaskans who can and will and should work. They've been singing the praises of the job program, but I'm not sure that it's worthy of all the praise we've heard. I think we need to look at the long-term gain. Many people cycle in and out of the jobs program, and there's some questions as to whether this program really does provide long-term meaningful employment or just temporary respite from the welfare cycle.
Further debate? Representative Bryce.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'll keep it short. The fact of the matter is that if they're working at McDonald's, the fact is if they're working sweeping up the streets, the fact is if they're working at any job that provides income, it's better than receiving benefits. And that's the goal that we need to keep our eyes set on, Madam Speaker.
The debate, Representative McLean.
I'd like to voice my support to the amendment number 5, and the reason is this: we're trying to get people off welfare and put them into works and to get them trained. And Madam Speaker, I believe that if we added the 500,000 to the Alaska Work Program, it would be beneficial for the whole state of Alaska.
Is there further debate? Are you ready for the question? Question being, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 5? Will all members please proceed to vote? The clerk please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
14 yeas, 25 nays.
And so Amendment Number 5 fails to pass the House. Will the body please stand at ease? To order. Representative Cabina.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. May we move up the calendar to introduction of guests?
We're under introduction of guests.
In the Taylor Gallery, I'd like to introduce a constituent of mine from Delta. It's down here talking to some people about what we can do about the problems with Fort Greeley and interested in the debate we have. I have Pastor Sidney Nelson from the Seventh-day Adventist Church in Delta.
Do we have further guests for introduction, Mr. Majority Leader?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. In the Pratovich Gallery, we have some constituents of our speakers, Bill and Marcia Ward from Soldotna.
Further guests for introduction? Representative Roper.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd like to introduce an old friend of mine in the Taylor Gallery. Excuse me, in the Pratovich Gallery. Excuse me very much. And he's Mr. Chuck Akers. He's the executive director now of the Alaska State Rural Development Council, a real good old friend of mine I met years ago at SIRI. And if you could please stand, Chuck. And I'd also like to welcome Tony Nekazawa from Fairbanks and the Alaska Cooperative Extension Service.
Further guests for introduction? This brings us back down the calendar to amendments.
Madam Speaker.
Representative Elton.
Madam Speaker, I apologize to the body, but when the representative from Valdez introduced a constituent from Delta Greeley, it caused me to glance up into the gallery and realize that a constituent of mine also is here in the gallery, Mr. Cordell Reiner.
Do we have any further guests? Brings us back down to amendments. Would the clerk please read the next amendment in front of her?
Amendment number 6 by Representative Davies and Finkelstein, beginning page 33, line 4.
Representative Davies?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move amendment number 6.
There is objection. Representative Davies?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. This amendment would add back $1.4 million in the Department of Law to restore the department to its FY95 levels. Without this amendment, legal support to state departments such as DNR, DEC, Department of Education will be without support or with seriously reduced support. Without this restoration, child support services will be impacted. The effect of this amendment would be to add back 3 environmental law attorneys, 2 fair business practice attorneys, 2 natural resource attorneys, 1 human resource attorney. This is an attorney that deals primarily with child protective services, and 2 commercial service attorneys. Madam Speaker, in the area of environmental law, we have a number of firms that choose to not follow the strict laws in terms of where they dump materials. And Madam Speaker, these environmental lawyers actually recover in the course of fines more money than they actually cost to operate this division. So this is a case where we really have the resources to carry this out. It's just simply we're saying, well, we don't have the will to do it. Madam Speaker, I think that this is a case where we really should be continuing this activity. As I say, it's basically funded, self-funded. In terms of fair business practices, Madam Speaker, there are a number of situations around the state. There are scams, telephone scams from outside the state. We don't have any resources in our Attorney General's office to investigate these and to warn citizens. We will be losing, our citizens will be directly losing a great deal of money a number of these sort of underhanded deals. Also, Madam Speaker, there are a number of there's a famous case in Anchorage recently where an Anchorage car dealer was convicted of 18 violations of consumer protection laws. Madam Speaker, with no one to go in and investigate these things, these issues won't be dealt with. There's a whole long list, Madam Speaker, of an antitrust law situation, and I think the whole issue in terms of fair business practices is to level the playing field for those businesses that are following the rules. There's a decided advantage if you can skate by without following the rules. So I think that we need to, in the same sense as we have referees in a basketball game, we need to have fair business practice attorneys in the business arena as well. Madam Speaker, we're also talking about natural resource attorneys. There are many disputes to, for example, the Fish and Game Board decisions. Madam Speaker, we also have Fish and Game Board allocation decisions have to be made all the time. We've heard of some fairly contentious situations in the last few years. Madam Speaker, if the Board of Fish and Game is not well advised with respect to what the law is, they're very likely to make allocation decisions that will end us up in court. And the resolution then of those resource allocation issues will become much more contentious, much more divisive, and far more costly. So, Madam Speaker, this is another case of wanting to maintain a certain amount of preventative maintenance. Madam Speaker, also, we're talking about the realm of human services. And in that area, the most important one, in my view, is the child protective services. We need to have attorneys in place now. These attorneys right now, in the FY95 situation, already maintain a caseload of 200 cases, active cases. Madam Speaker, if that's 200 cases on a yearly basis, that means you would have to get to a case every single day in order to keep up with your workload. Madam Speaker, that's just simply too much of a task already. If we cut these things, the support for these particular services, what we're doing is we are requiring children who ought to be placed in foster homes to stay in those situations longer. We're requiring the state to pay for those foster situations for more weeks. And not to mention the trauma to the kids of not getting these kinds of situations resolved in a timely manner. I think it's unconscionable to intentionally take an action where we're going to draw out the resolution of those kinds of situations. I think also the situation will develop if we don't have adequate human resources attorneys that tort litigations against the state will be filed. And what we'll have to do in those cases is we'll have to change our modus operandi. Right now we have a certain cutoff. If the claim is below a certain point, it's not cost effective to deal with that. Madam Speaker, that threshold will rise. It will rise significantly. And we'll be looking at saying, well, here's a case, a claim for $75,000. We might as well settle it. We just won't even contest it because we don't have the resources to contest it. The state, I submit, by not having this person on board, will actually lose more money as a result of increased tort claims than we'll be saving by not funding this position. Also, Madam Speaker, we're talking about the commercial areas of commercial law. And we're talking about occupational licensing situations. We're talking about elimination of work on these occupational licensing. Again, it's a question of leveling the playing field in the workplace. We're talking about attorneys that supplement the work of the Alcoholic Beverage Control Board. This cut will reduce our ability to initiate proceedings to discipline licensees. Madam Speaker, there's a whole range of activities that I've just outlined through environmental law, business practice, natural resources, human resources, and commercial services that the state is not going to adequately fund. And I submit, Madam Speaker, that these cuts will actually cost us more money in the long run than we'll save by making them right now. This department, these are the only general fund supported lawyers that work for the Attorney General, and these lawyers actually, I think, save the state more money than they actually cost us in the long run. So I think that this is another case of being penny wise and pound foolish.
Further debate on Amendment Number 6. Representative Robinson.
Yeah. Madam Speaker, I stand in support of the member from District 29's amendment. And as he stated, the Civil Division serves many functions. And I know that many of the members here are just like me, beginning to learn and understand what all of those functions are. But I think one of the most important functions is the function for the Human Service Section, which handles all child of need aid cases. And again, these are not just, a few of the cases. Every child in need of aid case has to go through the Civil Division. These are our abused and neglected children of the state. Cuts will impact the state's ability to protect these children from seriously abusive homes. Juvenile delinquents will also go unpunished. And many of us have talked over and over again about, how important and what one of the most serious areas we have in the state regarding crimes are with our juveniles. In the last couple of years, we have passed a lot of laws in several areas regarding juvenile crimes. If we truly have an interest in making sure that these juveniles, offenders, get the clear message, and that's what I continue to hear from everybody, we want to give them a clear message that they will be dealt with in the criminal justice system, then we need the infrastructure to make sure that happens. If the division can't handle all these cases, that means that these cases we're going to find other ways to try to deal with these situations coming before the Civil Division. The division also handles complaints against child care centers and adult daycare centers. And again, by cutting this division, we're making it very clear and we're telling the public that we want to put some of our most vulnerable adults and children, basically our citizens, in considerable risk. Cuts will also impact hunting and fishing and result in potential closures of certain fisheries. There is also the potential of postponement of timber sales, as been stated. And Madam Speaker, I just believe we live in a society that obviously, as we've all been talking about, at least people seem to believe that love lawsuits. I truly believe by not having the necessary attorneys to handle all the cases, that you're going to have situations where children are going to be killed because the state didn't intervene when they were supposed to. We're going to have cases where seniors may be abused, and we have the responsibility to make sure that they are not abused, and when they are, to intervene. And I truly believe that there's a real possibility that we're going to end up spending more money due to the fact that we're not putting the money that we need up front to take care of these problems. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Further debate? Representative Parnell.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I heard a lot about the most vulnerable people in society and how this budget in the Department of Law would impact them. And I want to inform the body that in this budget for the Department of Law, there are no cuts to the Health and Social Services area. You will not see any cuts to child protection. You will not see any cuts to protection of seniors. You'll not see any cuts to the juvenile delinquents, the efforts in that regard. And I want to tell you why. When the budget subcommittee met, we were given a reduction to meet of $3.5 million. While taking that reduction, we held criminal prosecutions harmless. In fact, we've increased the personnel costs of criminal prosecutions because we think that's a high priority. But on the civil side, which is what's at issue here, we took
Sorry, Representative Parnell, please continue.
Madam Speaker, our budget subcommittee took a $3.5 million reduction from the civil division. When we talked to the department about it, we were given a list of attorneys that they were going to X out of all the different divisions. From the health and social services area, they were going to X out five positions with a $3.5 million cut. Of those five, three don't even have attorneys working at this point. Two are current attorneys, and that was at the $3.5 million cut level. In the Finance Committee, we added back roughly $1.5 million to the legal services component of this budget, to this area. And if the department is now telling us that they're going to have to lay off one person from this area after having funding of $1.5 million put back in, then somebody else's priorities are messed up, and it's not the legislature's. And the reason is because the department came before our subcommittee and said that the most important function on the civil side to this administration, the most important function, are these child in need of aid cases. These are abused children that need protection. And what we're hearing now is that they're still going to cut one person and allocate reductions across all the various portions of the Department of Law, even when this is their most important area, their highest priority to them. I submit that there will be no cuts to child in need of aid cases, or at least there should not be, from this budget. And if there are, to current existing attorneys, and that's a priority that's being set by the administration and not by this legislature. Additionally, the Department of Law has roughly 200 attorneys in it. That's both criminal and civil. You will be seeing reductions to some areas. The Attorney General said that he would have to lay off about 13 attorneys out of the 200. All are going to come from the civil division, none from the criminal division. There will be an impact on fair business practices because the Attorney General's office has determined that that is basically the lowest priority of all the functions in his office. What that means is that people in the private sector, people like myself, who's a lawyer in the private sector, are going to have to take up some of the slack here. And I've done it. I've done free legal work for people in this situation. But additionally, we had an example used about a car dealership that apparently defrauded some of its customers, and then the Fair Business Practices section went to work on it. And the contention is that that kind of work will be gone. Well, if they have 120... cut back to about 110 attorneys in the civil division, I say that if this kind of level of activity is going on in the public, then there are attorneys who can prosecute that activity. There doesn't have to be a fair business practices section in the Attorney General's office to deal with these kinds of cases. If it's that high a priority, they will do it with the money they have. Now, in terms of the Department of Natural Resources, it's true there will probably be some impact in the Department of Natural Resources area of the Department of Law. DNR funds 25 attorneys in the Department of Law. The estimate is that there will be 3 to 4 attorneys laid off from Department of Natural Resources. So yes, there will be an impact to that area. I submit that it's simply a matter of the Attorney General setting his priorities and us having to live within a budget. However, I just want to stress that there are no cuts to Child Protective Services in this budget, and we are holding criminal prosecutions harmless. So I oppose the amendment, Madam Speaker.
Further debate, Representative Finkelstein.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Well, it's
It's a little bit disingenuous to say there's no cuts to a particular area in the budget when it's an unallocated reduction. I mean, how can you say that? The basis that the previous speaker is using is saying, well, geez, if we take the priorities expressed by the department and we apply them in a way that we'd like to, not they, but the way we'd like to, then there won't be a reduction there. But the problem is the department has a lot of things to balance because these duties, which these attorneys are for, are laws. These folks have statutory responsibilities to go out and do these various activities. These are, except in very rare instance, not optional activities. They're requirements that have to be met under law. And it's a very litigious society we live in. You can't, you know, even if you dislike attorneys and think we should be less involved, it's not going to serve any great purpose to go and try to knock out our attorneys because the other side's got attorneys. All you do is mean that we go into it poorly armed and poorly able to defend the citizens of our state. So to say we can say now that there aren't going to be cuts in these areas because we've waved some magic wand just isn't the case. The department, if they're predicting that based on this level of cuts, is making a realistic assessment of their statutory responsibilities. And it's going to be their decision in the end, and their decision based on laws we've passed and duties we've given them. Because remember, even though this cut is being made, we aren't going and rescinding a bunch of laws that they have to enforce. And the 25 attorneys working in a natural resource area, well, I will guarantee that the folks that they're dealing with have double that many attorneys. We're always outgunned when it comes to natural resource issues. And since there's hundreds of millions of dollars at stake in a lot of these kind of issues, it's important that we at least keep pace with the other side. And it's nice of the member speaking previously to offer free legal work. I will be glad to send the constituent in my district who come to me and know we're the only state in the union that doesn't have a consumer protection office. I will be glad to send them over to his legal firm, but I don't think that he'll last too long with the numbers of people out there. There is tremendous demand, and even as we stand now, we're only existing with our little bit of consumer protection effort because of the volunteer efforts of the Better Business Bureau. We cannot, continue at this level with reduced resources, and that's the net effect of this budget. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I don't know the reason why those positions are vacant, but it may be that it's because of the vacancy factor that's forced on the departments every year, and as a natural course of management of government, they're holding those positions open in order to meet the budget that we gave them for this particular fiscal year. With respect to what the priorities are within the Civil Division and by the Attorney General and the Department of Law, I would submit to you that child protection services are a priority of this administration and of the Attorney General. But there may be reasons in the management of government, ongoing management of government, why they would be unable to make that the highest priority at a particular time. And that might be because there's an ongoing either litigation or an ongoing effort at contract enforcement or defending regulations for economic development purposes, those types of things, which the continuity and the continuity would be lost and the cost would go up if you suspend that effort in midstream and refocus your priority. So I think that child protection services are a priority and that we'll see a transition to that, but it's probably not possible to do it all at once. I also want to point out that within the Department of Law over the last 10 years, we have lost some tremendous legal experience and expertise. And we have also, after those people who have been trained for the most part and experienced in the Department of Law and understand those sections of law have transitioned into private practice, the state has had to contract with them, one, because they're the best ones you can find now. At significant increased cost, you have to contract with them in order to pursue ongoing litigation with which they may have been involved over a period of years. So in certain cases, I believe that the priorities of the department and the attorney general will be recognized and will be refocused. Unallocated reductions do allow departments some flexibility, but the legislature doesn't get to come in and say they didn't do it right because we didn't tell them where to cut. Unallocated reductions ignore impacts and focus on numbers, and that is wrong. And to place the blame on the departments for those unallocated reduction decisions is not proper. The responsibility lies with the legislature and with the budget that we give them within those departments.
Representative Elton.
Madam Speaker, I mean, for a freshman, a lot of this debate is very illuminating. I don't know that much about the Department of Law, but I am bothered by the application that we're applying here, the unallocated reductions. I mean, I think most of us with possibly a few exceptions, are old enough to remember clotheslines. I mean, essentially what we're doing here is we're running up and we're jerking on a pair of shorts and we're making the whole clothesline jiggle, and we don't know what the consequences are. I mean, we're applying a cut here, and nobody can tell me what that means down the road. I've heard a lot of debate here, and I've heard a lot of people say, well, nothing's going to fall off the clothesline. But we don't know that. The beauty of this amendment is we're just saying that a higher priority right now is funding this increment in the Department of Law and defunding an increment someplace else. And nobody has been able to convince me yet that where we're defunding is more important than where we want to shift the money to.
Further debate, Representative Bundy.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I just observed that there are two ways to reduce a department's funding. One is to list specific items. The other is to give unallocated reductions. And depending on what side of the fence you're sitting on, if you list specific reductions, you're accused of micromanaging. If you give unallocated reductions now, then you're accused of not doing your legislative job. Appears that you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't.
Further debate? Ready for the question? The question, Representative Brown?
Madam Speaker, just a couple of points. The Attorney General did come before the Finance Committee just a few days before closeout, and he did inform us of what he thought the impacts were likely to be. And he told us at that time that there would have to be a reduction in the human services. And so to say now that we don't know about this or we didn't expect this, I don't think it's quite right. There are going to be impacts, they aren't going to be pretty, and they're going to affect many services of state government, including these important child protection services. Madam Speaker, we're taking 32% of the civil division's general funded positions with this cut, and it's too much, too deep. We should restore these dollars.
Further debate? Representative Davies.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Just to wrap up, this chart here is a chart of the, you know, boxes that represent the civil division in our Department of Law. You can't really read the chart from where you're sitting, but there are most of them are solid blue boxes, and those represent positions that are filled or either, and maybe there's about five positions that are vacant because of the vacancy factor. There's approximately 45 positions on this chart, with the exception of a couple of boxes that are dotted, which indicate positions that the department had indicated a priority that need to be added to meet their responsibilities. Well, needless to say, of course, we're not talking about adding positions. We're talking about subtracting them. Madam Speaker, we're talking about out of this division right here, where there are now 40 civil GF-funded lawyers, we're talking about cutting 13. That's a pretty close to 33%. That's a one-third of the lawyers. Now, you can't tell me that this division where you've got people that have, in human services, have caseloads of 200 cases each, that by reducing this by 33%, that we're not going to impact it. We're going to impact it seriously. Madam Speaker, in human services, on this chart, the only place where there was a proposal to add two lawyers was in human services. And the reason for that is that's one of the fastest growing areas in the need for law services in the state of Alaska. We have a lot of children who are in situations where they're in need of some help. It's not quite directly germane to this case, but to this particular thing, but it's related, where we had the situation where a boy was forced to shoot his father because of the treatment he was receiving. And that's after repeated calls from friends and neighbors to the state. The state failed that boy. The state was not in a position to respond. That's the situation right now, Madam Speaker. If we cut these services and we cut the services in DFYS, those situations are going to increase. They're not going to get better. And no amount of wishing that it would be different, is going to change that. We are making serious and deep cuts in the civil division, 33% roughly. And those cuts are going to be felt. Our population isn't decreasing, Madam Speaker. Our population is increasing. The number of cases that this group has to deal with is not decreasing. It's increasing. We have passed many laws that are also going to increase the need for lawyers around in state government. We've placed a priority in not making any reductions in the criminal division. But Madam Speaker, a lot of these other situations are going to devolve into civil lawsuits as well, and we're going to have to handle those. under the cuts that we're proposing, I submit that there's going to be an increase in human misery, and there's going to be an increase in loss of funds to the state of Alaska as a result of this. I think this is the wrong priority. I think we do have money in other areas of the budget that we could shift in here and do instead of this. I propose one. I'm sure many of you could select other areas that you think are less important than this. I don't think that should be the debate. I think the debate should be, where can we find the money to take care of these really needed services? I repeat, Madam Speaker, the need for these services are not diminishing. The need is increasing. Madam Speaker, I strongly urge my colleagues to support this amendment.
Ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 6? Would all members please proceed to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
14 yeas, 25 nays.
And so Amendment Number 6 fails to pass the House. Would the clerk please read the next amendment on her desk?
Amendment Number 7 by Representative Brown, beginning page 25, line 38.
Representative Brown?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I move Amendment Number 7.
There is objection. Representative Brown?
Thank you. Madam Speaker, Amendment Number 7 deals with a core basic function of state government, and that is to collect revenues from the taxpayers that are owed to state government. Reductions in this part of the budget are truly counterproductive because we have not reached the point of diminishing returns in terms of our audit and collection activities. Madam Speaker, the budget before us cuts about $500,000 out of the revenue collection functions of the Department of Revenue, and this amendment would put back a portion of those dollars, and I think it's very important to restore them in these areas, the Oil and Gas Audit Division, the Income and Excise Audit Division, and the Commissioner's Office. The loss of income to the state of Alaska from not funding this small amount of money is likely to be in the millions, millions of dollars. Madam Speaker, there's no doubt in my mind that these people we're talking about that would be funded with this amendment will pay for themselves many times over and will bring in to our Treasury needed dollars to pay for all the other parts of government that we've been discussing here today. If we're not going to consider new revenues to the state of Alaska, let's at least collect the dollars that are owed to the Treasury from the taxes that we now have on the books. I just submit that this is a pretty short-sighted reduction we're making. We're reducing the commissioner's office to the point that it'll have less support on the commissioner's immediate staff than we have in our minority members' offices right now. And this commissioner serves on many important and financially significant boards, has a great deal of responsibility in managing the affairs of the state of Alaska, and I believe these positions are very much needed. And I think if you think about it, we're asking this small department to deal with some of the largest corporations in the world, and it's very important that that commissioner have adequate support to be able to get the job done. And they have been doing a good job and settling a number of the outstanding issues, and we want that to continue. We don't want to bog things down and for lack of just a few hundred thousand forego many millions of dollars that are owed to the state. So I'd urge my colleagues to support Amendment Number 7.
Representative Beasy, or Mr. Majority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. With permission of the body, I'd like to move back up the counter to introduction of guests.
Without objection, we're under introduction of guests.
Madam Speaker, today we are privileged to have with us the Russian General Counsel, the Honorable Georgi Voloshkin, in the Protovich Gallery. Mr. Voloshky is here today. He is currently serving as Deputy Director of the Department of North American at the Ministry of Foreign Affairs of Russia with the Russian Federation. And he'll be meeting with other members during the course of the afternoon as time permits. And if the members would help me welcome them.
Welcome. Mr. Majority Leader, Minority
Peace,
Leader.
Cultural Revolving Loan Fund is where the funds would be taken from to fund these needed functions within the Department of Revenue. Madam Speaker, I'd submit that agriculture is one area of state government where we can cut back. At least we can cut back by a few hundred thousand dollars and actually save the state a lot of money in the long run. Madam Speaker, in this program, in the Division of Agriculture, we're spending about $3.3 million a year on what's really a cradle-to-grave kind of operation. We are providing the loan money to keep many of these people going. We're doing inspections, marketing, promotion, a lot of different things in this program. Madam Speaker, during the Finance Committee debate, one of the things that was somewhat troubling to me was learning that the Division of Agriculture plans to expand the agricultural disposal program in the coming fiscal year. They indicated they're going to sell about 80 parcels in areas of the state where some of which we've had agricultural disposals in before. And Madam Speaker, we have a long and sad history, I'd say, in the area of attempting to promote agriculture in the Arctic climate of our state. I think we've had an unrealistic vision of it in the past and some poor planning and other reasons that those projects were not successful. But one of the things that I think we should have learned by now is that government intrusion in the form of the agricultural restrictions that are placed on these ag parcels is not a model for success. It's not necessarily a good idea to get a lot more people out there trying to operate under the terms of the existing agricultural disposal program. And I'd submit if we want to expand agriculture, we ought to do it in a fee simple arrangement and let people go out and farm if they can, and not further expand this program, which has certainly a questionable past, and get a lot more people hooked and dependent on the Agricultural Revolving Loan Fund. We just don't need to be expanding government in this way at this time. Therefore, I'd submit to you it is a very appropriate funding source to take a few hundred thousand dollars out of the ARLF and transfer it into an area where it truly will do some good for our state treasury.
Further debate? Representative Grusendorf?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Speaker. I'm not going to argue the funding source on this, but I am going to argue the merits of what the mover of the amendment is trying to do. And we're sitting here and we're concerned about the fiscal gap. And this concern, of course, has driven us to a very, very frugal, if not overly conservative, budget. But at the same time, in doing that, we've had a tendency to cut certain areas that would allow us to correct or collect some revenues, which would narrow that fiscal gap. But instead, what do? We are widening that fiscal gap. Now, the last time that I was dealing in this part of the budget, they were telling us that a auditor was probably worth about $3.5 million in collections, and in some cases upwards to $6 million. And we haven't reached that threshold yet. But last year we were forced with the statute of limitations coming down on us, and which is information had to be gathered in order to come up with some collections from various companies. And this leads me to a situation that occurred that I think would illustrate this. Years ago when I was subcommittee chair of DNR, the department wanted a gravel pit inspector. And they wanted this gravel pit inspector for $70,000. And I said, my gosh, you want this gravel pit inspector? And they said, well, this person will collect at least $800,000 in revenue. And I said, well, okay, because they had a pit, and everybody was kind of on their honor in that pit. They'd go in there, and they'd take their gravel and tell the state, well, I took X amount, you know, of tons or square foot or yard, cubic yards. Well, I checked up on it in the second session, and they had received $1.5 million in revenue from that pit because of that gravel pit inspector. Now, that kind of made me a believer in the fact that there's a lot of resources out there that we kind of just let go and there's nobody, you know, really watching it. And if we kind of maximize that, you'd be surprised how much revenue we could generate. But that was the example that drove this whole point home to me, is that we've got to actively pursue what is rightly due the people of the state of Alaska who own those resources. And it makes no sense. You're trying to reach a bottom line, narrow the gap, but what do? We widen it. I support the amendment.
Representative Terrio.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I think, however, that you have to be careful with that argument, because if you take that out, you can make the argument that maybe we should go to the Constitutional Budget Reserve, appropriate $100 million, and put it into gravel pit inspectors and auditors, and we'll be so awash in money next year that the fiscal gap will have disappeared. We'll just spend ourselves out of the fiscal problem that we have. So, you know, to say that that argument is linear and that you can just project that out forever, that the more money you spend, the more money you make, it doesn't wash. It just doesn't make sense. With regards to the proposed reduction here in the Division of Agriculture, right now we've gone through a shakeup in our agriculture here in the state of Alaska. We did have policy that I think was doomed to failure from its inception. I'm very pleased to hear all the positive comments over the past couple weeks about people that are interested in moving to a fee simple title situation so that people will actually have a resource that they can use as collateral to go to a private bank, perhaps to be able to capitalize their farm. And in fact, I've got a bill that's working its way through the system, should be up in finance pretty soon, and from gauging the discussions that have gone on, I should have no problem with an amendment to do that. The growth that we're having in agriculture right now is small, incremental growth. It's the type of growth that will be around through good and bad times. It's sustainable growth. Growing up, my family used to drive to the end of a dirt street that's now paved out in the North Pole area. We would buy milk from a guy who milked a cow by hand into a pail. He'd pour it from the pail into a jar, and we would buy the jar of milk. That was the type of agricultural growth that we're having now. It's small growth. And if we pull the rug out from under them now, I think what we do is we cut off that the ability to create those sustainable jobs. Now, at the DNR subcommittee level, we did not hold the Division of Agriculture harmless. We've shifted things around. We actually shifted the funding source for part of the division to the Ag-Revolving Loan Fund. And what that means is that loan fund will potentially have to be recapitalized earlier. The amount of money that's coming out of the fund now means that the fund will be defunct or run dry in about the year 2000. So as we are right now, if we don't recapitalize it, that state support for agriculture gradually goes away anyway. And, you know, that's a discussion we're going to have in the future. I've heard members over the years talk about we have to downsize government. We have to collapse divisions into each other, perhaps departments into each other. And that's what we have proposed to do at the DNR subcommittee level. And it was none of the minority members that came to me and said, I've got an idea of how we can streamline this department. We made cuts so that DGGS is potentially merged in with mining. That's something that's somewhat sensitive to me because DGGS is located up in Fairbanks, but we're trying to get an administrative savings there. We've structured the agricultural component so that perhaps eventually it can be merged in with, or forestry can be merged in with it, so that under the overall banner of agriculture, of which I believe silviculture is a subcomponent, we can get some administrative savings there. So we have tried to do things that are sensible. We are trying to push the department into downsizing and streamlining. You can only go so far so fast. And I think to pull more money out of the revolving loan fund, we'll just send that program basically into a nosedive. Thank you.
Further debate? Representative Finkelstein.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The previous speaker made a remark that doesn't make much sense to me at all. He somehow interprets that there's someone here is alleging a linear relationship between these increases and the money coming in. I don't know where he picked that up, but I don't think any members said that on this floor. What we're operating off of is information on the record that says if we spend this amount of money that it's anticipated, that we'll bring in more money. That's no a linear relationship means you just think that the relationship goes on forever. No one suggested that, and if he's been led to believe that, I will try to explain to him otherwise. This amendment and others that I and others are going to offer later are based on information that we have about those particular positions and the particular activities within that department. It's true it wouldn't go on forever. If we kept increasing or in these cases actually keeping them the same, in the future it doesn't mean we're always going to make more money. But in this particular circumstance and as this amendment affects it, I believe that we will make more money by adding these funds. Actually, the corollary is true. In most of these cases, we're going to lose more money by the reductions that would be allowed if these amendments weren't the case. And I think it's important to state that on the record. Thank you, Madam Speaker.
Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I will also say that the member from North Pole District 33 extrapolated a conclusion that nobody even suggested on the floor, and that is that you can spend yourselves rich. No one believes that. But in fact, The irony in this discussion is that in order to recapitalize the Agriculture Revolving Loan Fund, in order to provide money for education, in order to provide money for any of the other things that we determine are priorities, we ought to make sure that we allow enough money to make sure that our auditors are finding every dollar that's owed to the state and making sure that, we're being paid. I guess an example that I would make is that not doing it is akin to someone who owns a retail store, leaving his till open and letting people decide when they're going to pay and how much they're going to pay. Now, if he hires a cashier to take that money in, you got better control over it. If you have two tills, you probably get two cashiers. And that's the argument that, this discussion is that we just want to know and make sure that the dollars that are owed to the state under the laws that the legislature has put on the books is paid to the state treasury. Only what's owed us, not anything more, and we haven't reached the point of diminishing return yet. That means an investment in this will allow for funding for funds that we can put into other priorities in order, as the member from North Pole pointed out, recapitalization of the Agriculture Revolving Loan Fund, which regardless of whether we recapitalize it or not, it still loses money every year.
Representative Bryce?
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I believe the member of from the Kenai area addressed some of the concerns that I wanted raised, namely what the representative from District 16 was pointing out is that there is a thing called the law of diminishing returns, and that quite often our budgets are not linear, or the effects of cuts on our budget are not linear, but and this is such a case whereby we're on the front slope of the law of diminishing returns, and for every penny we put into this area, there's a great, great return to the state. And of course, that goes up to a point where for every penny that you put in, you get a penny back. I would suggest we're not at the optimum point currently, and that we could probably see more investment in this area of the state budget and see a greater return to the state. So when we're talking about, you know, linear ideas versus more curved ideas relating to diminishing returns.
Further debate on Amendment Number 6. Representative Davies.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would just like to make it explicit a point that was probably implicitly made, which is that, you know, if we're concerned in the funding source here in capitalizing the ARLF, and clearly if we were to make this fund shift from ARLF to revenue collection, we would collect more than enough money to recapitalize ARLF with the amount of money that we would bring in. So I think that that's, you know, clearly not a, you know, a valid argument. You know, the concern is there, certainly, but this would be one area to directly take care of that concern.
Representative Grusendorf.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Speaker. Sometimes there's a problem that we all have, and I'm guilty of it as well, is that when I know that the area that I'm concerned with is under attack, in this case a funding source, we oftentimes do not listen to what other people are saying. And in no way did I imply that there would be a linear approach to revenue. I said there was a threshold, and that threshold, of course, is diminishing returns. How much can you invest, and what are you going to get back? And if you check the record, I did say threshold. Now, I know that the good representative from North Pole was very concerned about the agricultural products and agriculture in general, and I think if you remember my prefacing marks before I started, is I'm not talking about the funding source. I'm talking about the general way of doing business in the state, and that is to simply maximize what is owed us. And when we do things in the budget that does not allow it to do it, we are simply exacerbating our problems in meeting the fiscal question that many of you feel that we have. It has nothing to do with the Constitutional Budget Reserve. Well, yes, it does. It means we have to go there sooner by not collecting what's owed us.
Representative Ogun.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I'd like to rise in opposition to this amendment and point out to the members the fact that the ARLF funds are needed because of the soon-to-come-online Point McKenzie projects that are tied up in mental health. When those come online, farmers will need that money to develop those farms and get those assets out of the state hands and into private hands where they belong and diversify our economy right now. So we need to protect that ARLF board.
Further debate on Amendment Number 6. Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I didn't quite understand that the last member's remarks about
getting it out of the state's hands into private hands. I thought he was saying something about giving the money to the farmers.
Further debate on Amendment Number 6. Representative Ogun.
I was talking about getting the those farms out of the state's hands, which currently are being owned by the state, and getting into the farmers' hands and into the private sector.
Further debate? Representative Brown.
Madam Speaker, and that's my point. When we get these parcels out of the state's hands under the Ag Disposal Program, we're then going to be paying, based on past history, up to 90% of those farmers' operating costs. Every new farmer we get costs us a lot of money, and I just point out that these people have a historic default rate of better than 64% of the money that's been loaned to them has not been paid back to the state of Alaska.
You ready for the question? Representative Davies?
Madam Speaker, I have an amendment to the amendment that I'd like to move. I think it's simple enough that I could do it conceptually, if you don't mind.
What is your amendment, Representative Davies?
Madam Speaker, I would move that we strike the funding source, ARLF in this case, and substitute GF. And if I could speak to the amendment.
Does the clerk have that? And you've moved the amendment. Is there objection to the amendment to the amendment? There is objection. Representative Davies.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The reason that I'm doing this is that I think that that we're losing sight of the purpose of this amendment by debating at some length the funding source that has been proposed. I think it's a legitimate funding source, and I think that, as I've argued before, I think that we could fund it that way. But, Madam Speaker, by amending it to just be a straight GF, I think the proposition will be much more clear. Madam Speaker, we will use GF funds in the amount of several hundred thousand dollars to generate several million dollars in GF funds. So let's just talk about apples and apples. Let's talk about GF funds expended to generate more GF funds. And that's the reason for proposing this amendment.
Further debate on the amendment to the amendment. You ready for the question? The question, shall the amendment to the amendment on Amendment Number 7 pass? Would members please proceed to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
10 yeas, 27 nays.
So amendment to Amendment Number 7 fails to pass. Is there further debate on Amendment Number 7? You ready for the question? The question being, shall the House adopt Amendment Number 7? Will all members please proceed to vote? Clerk, please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Clerk, please tally the board.
13 yeas, 24 nays.
And so Amendment Number 7 fails to pass the House. Mr. Minority Leader.
Can we have a brief at ease, please?
Stand at ease. We take a break, I think. Would the House please come back to order? Would the clerk please read the next amendment on her desk?
Amendment Number 8 by Representative Davies, beginning page 33, line 4.
Representative Davies? There is objection. Representative Davies?
Madam Speaker, Amendment Number 8 speaks to the Oil and Gas Division of Department of Natural Resources and would move $150,000 back into the oil and gas leasing effort. Madam Speaker, this is focused on the pre-sale analysis of leases. Madam Speaker, oil and gas is, without question, the most important source of revenue to the state of Alaska. This decrease in $150,000 that's proposed will result in the elimination of two or three positions in the lease sale analysis group. And eliminating those positions will result in decreasing the number of lease sales scheduled and will mean not being able to implement the exploration licensing program. Madam Speaker, we, over the last few years, have focused on the need to be open for business, the need to increase jobs. And one of the aspects of being open for business and increasing jobs is continuing to support the major industry in the state in terms of revenue, which is the oil industry. We have done backflips to try to help the oil industry. We passed last year the exploration licensing program. We passed revisions to the lease process, lease sale process, in Senate Bill 308 last year. We're talking seriously about reducing royalties to encourage exploration at marginal fields so that we'll have more activity in the oil patch. Our governor has made a point of traveling to the headquarters of the various oil companies to convince them that we are oil industry friendly in the state of Alaska, that we want their business. The leadership of this body and the other body and other members have traveled back to Washington, D.C. just over the past weekend to try to convince the nation to change its energy policy so it would be more favorable to the state of Alaska. And, Madam Speaker, why, in the face of all that effort to encourage the oil industry, would we reduce a couple of positions here where we're going to drag out and slow down the process of offering lease sales? I mean, we're going to send up all these advertising. We're going to say, hey, we got this great deal for all you guys. You know, you want you to explore, and we're going to give you benefits, and if you find stuff that is marginal, we'll reduce the royalties. But when you get here, we're going to drag out the permitting process, and we're going to drag out the leasing process, and we're going to create a huge amount of frustration. We're going to bring these guys to the table, and then we're going to say, well, excuse me, I guess we can't really deal today. Would you come back next week? Well, Madam Speaker, I submit that that's not being friendly, and that's not being open for business. So I would think that this is one of the areas where we really ought to think carefully and put a few positions back in the Department of Natural Resources, so the department that manages all of our resources can do a good job. I think that this is another one of those things. Clearly, it's not a this isn't a linear proposition, you know, like we had the discussion last time where we just keep adding positions and we'll be more and more productive. I don't think that's the case. But on the other hand, I think that we're way below the critical mass that we need in this department to really be aggressively out there putting new leases for sale. There's a lot of property the state of Alaska has that ought to be being seriously considered. We ought to be going through discussions with industry about where the next sales ought to be, and we ought to be preparing those. And, Madam Speaker, in the process of doing that, we can't do that in a slipshod way. I mean, there are always people that are opposed to anything that you want to do. And so if you do it in a casual way and you don't do it with the appropriate public process, you'll be dragged into court. And so, Madam Speaker, it's important to do this right. And it's important to do it right the first time so you don't industry all interest in something and bidding on it, and then you get it dragged out in court for weeks and months and days and years. So, Madam Speaker, I think this is one of those areas where we need to put a little bit of money in the budget so we can generate a lot of money at the other end of the process. Thank you.
Further debate on Amendment Number 8. Representative Terrio.
The previous speaker, would you have you believe that basically it sounds like we're shutting down the oil and gas function, which is not true. If you look on page 26, line 7, they still have over $4 million to perform this function. Originally, at the subcommittee level, we had proposed a reduction of $200,000. And $100,000 was at the director's office, and if I remember correctly, $100,000 in the auditing function. Based on information from the department, we reconsidered that, backed off $50,000, and placed the reduction in the oil and gas leasing. Over the past couple years having this budget, I have from time to time had industry people come in and express some reservation and a little bit of nervousness over budget reductions and how that might impact them. And sometimes we're able to consider that and make adjustments, and sometimes we have to, you know, make a tough call and tell them there's just not the money to make their comfort level as high as they would like to have it. In this instance, I didn't hear one peep from industry people. Nothing. So I think the amount of money that's left is adequate for the function to be continued.
Further debate? Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. This is the goose that lays the black golden egg. Our whole economy is driven by oil and gas, the development of oil and gas. And I think if you look on page 26, oil and gas development, we spend a little over $4 million on mining development, we pay 3.8 on. I submit to you that if you look at the economics of Alaska and what drives our whole economy, we are driven by oil and gas and the development of oil and gas in this state, and that we ought not to be nickel and diming the leasing program because that's what drives our entire economy, and I think this is a short-sighted reduction.
Further debate, Representative Brown.
Thank you, Madam Speaker.
The member from District 33 said he hadn't heard any industry people complaining about this cut to the budget. And I just say, it may not be in industry's interest for the state to know as much as possible about what we're selling, but it certainly is in the state's interest to know what we're selling. And that's really what's at stake here with the professional staff that we're talking about. People have looked back over the years and said, when Prudhoe Bay was sold, did we get out of it what we should have for the state treasury and for the citizens? And we are the trustees of these most valuable resources owned by all the people of Alaska. Madam Speaker, the professional expertise in this area is very thin in the Department of Natural Resources, very thin. And it really does trouble me to see us further diminish the capacity of the state, of the department, to understand and properly value our resources. So I support the amendment and the addition of these dollars.
Further debate? Are you ready for the question? Representative Davies.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Just by way of wrapping up, if I could read two sentences.
You can.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. These are from the department talking about this specific $150,000 reduction and what the impact will be. The department says a decrease of $150,000 will result in the elimination of two or three positions. They didn't say it might or could or maybe. It said it will result in the elimination of two or three positions. Further, they state eliminating these positions will result, they didn't say may or might, said will result in decreasing the number of lease sales scheduled and will mean not being able to implement the exploration licensing program. Madam Speaker, those are real and serious impacts of this specific $150,000 decrement. Madam Speaker, I couldn't agree more with my good friend from Kenai, who says that this is the goose that lays the golden egg, or the black golden egg, as he said. Madam Speaker, no one doubts that oil drives our economy and that it's important to the state of Alaska. And for us to be in a position of not aggressively marketing that resource, and also, as the member to my right indicates, of also being very careful about pricing that resource so that the state gets the optimum return for our resource, Madam Speaker, I think is would not be the wisest posture for us to be in terms of being responsible for husbanding that particular resource. So, Madam Speaker, I think that this is a place where we really do need to, if anything, beef up the efforts of the state of Alaska in managing resources, and I believe that that effort will be rewarded many times over by increased oil production should we get more of these leases on the schedule.
Further debate?
Thank you.
You ready for the question? The question being, is shall the House adopt amendment number 8? Would all members please proceed to vote? The clerk please lock the roll. Does any member wish to change his or her vote? Would the clerk please tally the board?
14 yeas, 24 nays.
And so amendment number 8 fails to pass the House. Would the clerk please read the next amendment on her desk?
Amendment number 9 by Representative Navarre, beginning page 29, line 11.
Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. Before I move the amendment, I want to point out that it's drafted a little bit incorrectly. The reduction on page 37, line 18, is made in session expenses. The number should actually be from 6047000 to 5547000. And a corresponding change on line 15, the reduction made on page 37, line 24, is a reduction of 500,000 from the special session contingency fund, and a corresponding change is needed on line 22. And with that, Madam Speaker, I will move the amendment. Ask unanimous consent.
There is objection, Representative Navarre.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. The road maintenance area, I know, is a concern of yours. It's been a concern of mine for a number of years, ever since I've been in the legislature. We're spending less money on maintenance and operations in this budget than we spent 12 years ago. And I think that's important, particularly when you include into that calculation the fact that there's been increases in wages. We've added significant number of lane miles through our construction budget. We've added signal lights at various intersections for public safety. We have added lighting on many of our streets that we've constructed or reconstructed over that period of 10 years. that have added significantly to utility costs that we have to pay, fixed cost increases, not even to include into that the fact that the consumer price index, if we had just adjusted for inflation over that 10-year period of time, we would need about another $25 million in this budget in order to keep pace with what we were spending 12 years ago. What this budget means in maintenance and operation is it means that there will be less people grading the roads, because all of the budget in maintenance and operations, or most of the budget in maintenance and operation, goes to the people who drive the graders and drive the sanding trucks and plow the roads. It's necessary for commerce because it's our whole transportation infrastructure. It's important for school buses and education because they travel on those roads, and it's definitely important to the safety of the traveling public. There's an estimated 3 billion vehicle miles driven annually in this state, and the safety of the roads should be a major concern and priority of ours. You know, I had the same perception that some of you, particularly the newer people, have when I came into the legislature 11 years ago, and that was that DOT is a big budget. We can reduce them. We can cut the fat out of the budget without impacting services at all. And I can tell you that it took me some time to learn the budget. I chaired that budget for a couple of years to understand the budget and focus on what the impacts are. And it's not true. We cannot reduce this budget in maintenance and operations without reducing services, particularly when you add in the increased lane miles and utility costs that we've added over the years. We've added thousands of lane miles to our road system as we've widened roads and improved roads. We've added maintenance costs on, and we have failed to fund them. I want to give an example of our local area, because in my local district, which I'm, of course, most familiar with, we have less people now than we had 12 years ago. We have more lane miles that they're trying to maintain. We've added significant number of streetlights, and maybe many of you don't know, but every time you put up a light post and put a light on it in order to make the road safer, it costs $3,000 a year to pay for the electricity and to maintain those lights. So that's part of the construction budget. We get to build them with capital dollars, which most comes from the federal government. We spend about $150 to $200 million a year rebuilding roads, and we don't pay or build into the budget the costs of maintaining those roads. So in our district, we, by the way, have an excellent superintendent. He's been around that area for a couple of years. He's doing a great job with the people that he has. But there's only so far that you can stretch the dollars before you really start impacting public service. And I think we're seeing that when we don't maintain the roads by cutting back brush, it makes it harder. Lines of sight, visibility on the roads is diminished for anywhere from people pulling out of driveways. And we all know that on our highways and byways in this road, we pull out of driveways right onto the main highway in a lot of areas of the state. So for moose or for people pulling out on the highway, not cutting back the brush poses a significant saving. Also, not paying for the costs of maintaining the roads, doing the sealing, the tar sealing, allowing for fixing of potholes, all of that leads to a quicker deterioration of our roads. Deferring that maintenance simply means that money we have to put that money into the capital budget and in order to rebuild those roads. And you know, road maintenance should be a priority, and not just because it's important to commerce and to education, but first and foremost because of its impact on public safety. In our system, road maintenance is not just a convenience. It's not just a public convenience. It is, in fact, a matter of life and death. On our roads in the wintertime, if they're not plowed in time, it means school buses can't get around. It means traffic, commerce can't get around. But if it's not sanded, Madam Speaker, you know in our district, or the district that I used to serve and that you now serve, we both served it at one time, and in other districts, everybody can point out areas where there's a hill coming down into a town or an intersection where if the roads are not sanded, it leads to accidents, an increased number of accidents, and a tremendous threat to public safety, and we should not ignore that. The other point I'll make is that we have, and it gives flexibility to the department, we've given, again, an unallocated reduction. We've said you're going to take this as an unallocated reduction. You figure out where the impacts are going to be. And so I want to just put in a plug for the department here that as they go about making the reductions based on this budget and the impacts become known to your constituents and to you, you don't get to come back and complain to the department. We chose not to make specific allocations because the last time we tried to do it, everybody got upset and said, well, we didn't mean you were going to cut actual maintenance on the roads in our district. That is, in fact, what is going to happen in this budget. Maintenance is going to be cut. And I submit to you that both the public and this body ought to consider the funding source that we're using here, special session and contingency. Again, if we do our job correctly, we won't have to come back for a special session. And the session expenses, general session expenses, are less of a priority than is road maintenance in this state. And Madam Speaker, I would urge members to vote in favor of this amendment for the good of road maintenance, safety of the traveling public on our highways.
Mr. Minority Leader.
Thank you, Madam Speaker. I would like to rise to associate myself with the remarks of my friend from Kenai. And I don't only say that because I know of the problems in my own district, Madam Speaker. I say it because I know of some problems in your district. And we all know that road maintenance personnel have shrunk throughout the state due to cutbacks in our effort to reduce the size of state government over the years. This is one area, Madam Speaker, that I really do believe should fall into the category of being a priority for the state. For many of the same reasons that the representative from Kenai just spoke about with safety, you know, I always dread the thought of a school bus getting into an accident and having a major problem and perhaps some deaths or serious injuries due to our inability to properly fund road maintenance when there are continues to be other things in the state that we continue to fund that I don't believe is a priority. I know I hear it from my constituents, and I know you must hear it from yours, because when I traveled to Homer and Soldotna and Anchor Point, always will stand out in my mind. Madam Speaker, when the Transportation Committee traveled into your district and met with some of your constituents, I remember them talking about East End Road and about potholes so big that it could swallow up a Volkswagen, I think somebody said, and those kinds of things. So I know you feel from your own constituency just how important those are, and I really got a good understanding for the type of road maintenance that's required in some of the urban centers, some of the areas that have major highways and so forth. Unlike in my district, where the ferry system is our only highway, and we have some roads that need to be maintained. So I'm looking at this from a statewide perspective, Madam Speaker, and I'm sure. Because